passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. Millie is here and hopefully will not be disturbed by the window washers that were around this morning. It was a good thing we didn't try and record this morning, Peter.
I was 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, maybe even more. It was the landscapers versus me. The landscapers won. This week it is window washers versus Millie and allergies versus me. So we'll see what happens. But I have put all my faith in Millie to come out on top.
Allergies is that they're undefeated. That's like they're pretty close to time in terms of winning streak, I feel like.
Oh yeah, they have, in terms of humanity's winning streaks, and I'd have to dig a little deeper here. I think the allergies are, I don't think they have a loss.
Well, we're going to talk about some teams that took some losses. We have, in fact, a new number one team in the Baseball America Top 25 this week, as Tennessee moves to the top of the Top 25 for the first time since the end of the 2022 regular season. They move up as Texas A&M took a series loss at LSU and Arkansas took a series loss at Kentucky. That whole, like those three things there, kind of through the SEC race, not really into disarray, because the same four teams are still competing for the SEC title: Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, A&M. It did make things a little clearer, though. A&M is now two games off of the pace of Kentucky. Arkansas and Tennessee are a game back. We'll see how that unfolds in the final 2 weeks. It makes the race for the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament a lot murkier. For ways that are not really easy to, well, I guess it's relatively easy to explain. Since 2015, every number one seed in the NCAA tournament has ranked one or two in RPI on Selection Monday. And since 2016, every number one seed has won their respective conference. So A&M, which is number one in RPI today, is not winning its conference. Kentucky is currently winning the SEC and is number two in the SEC. So you might say they have the inside track. Every human poll, meanwhile, says Tennessee's the number one team in the country. They're eighth in RPI, and they're probably just not even going to be able to get to two at this stage. So I know some people like don't even want the number one seed because the number one seed hasn't won the NCAA tournament in more than 20 years. But if you're interested in that, like that race is suddenly quite interesting. Peter, we could take this really anywhere. Like the Kentucky-Arkansas series was a lot of fun. Came down to a rubber game on Sunday, which Kentucky won. The LSU upset of A&M was quite significant. LSU won the first two games. We could talk about Tennessee being the number one team in the country. Take it wherever you want to take it with these top line SEC stories.
Oh, man. I guess I'll start with what was probably the most marquee series of the weekend in Lexington, with Kentucky taking down Arkansas. I was obviously really impressed with Kentucky and how they got to Arkansas's previously like invincible pitching staff. I think that one, Kentucky really needed that. They had lost consecutive SEC series, neither of which were bad series losses, but then you get to a point where you've got three straight series losses on the books with not an easy one remaining. It's just a little bit of a not a great position from a momentum standpoint. But I think it was really, really validating for Kentucky, both, you know, for myself and then also them. Like, they had the one thing its resume had lacked to that point was a slam dunk, like huge marquee series win, which I guess now its earlier sweep of Georgia in March is looking more and more like that, but like a top five series win. And they got that in rather convincing fashion. And I think, you know, that lineup, they can they make up for lack of star power, I think, in just every single one through nine turns in quality at bats. Like, I think that, you know, they're very matured, advanced in their approaches, and then you pair that with solid pitching. I think it's a recipe for success. And then we obviously talk at length about the brand of baseball Kentucky plays, which is pushing the pace on opposing teams and all of that. So that bode really well for the Wildcats this weekend. They obviously play exceptionally well at home, which it's looking increasingly likely that that's where they will be for the entirety of its NCAA tournament run, unless they go to until the College World Series. But on the flip side for Arkansas, and I'm sure you feel the same way, I think that it was more of a one-off weekend for the pitching staff in an anomaly as opposed to something that people should actually be concerned about. I still have my worries about the offense, and Will McIntyre, I think in his last five or so appearances, has allowed 13 runs in 10 innings or something similar to that. So I think getting him back on track is important, but it was an uncharacteristically tough weekend for the rotation, which I'm not worried about at all. But again, a little worried about the Arkansas lack of firepower and offense. Like, if they need to pick up its pitching when they don't have it, like, how is that going to look? I know they did it in a couple of games previously, but when you get into a regional, super regional, that's really my only worry with the Razorbacks, but way more validating for Kentucky than it is like an indictment on Arkansas.
Yeah, it was just a week ago that I was saying things like, I thought Kentucky had kind of proven that they weren't one of the SEC's elite teams, that there was a line between them and Tennessee and A&M and Arkansas. And I acknowledge that they might make that take look really dumb if they went out and won this weekend, and they made that take look really dumb. But I do think it was a really significant series win for them. You know, yes, they got this marquee win, and, you know, some of that is just a matter of when they play teams, you know, because, you know, when they played Georgia, we didn't realize what Georgia was. And today Georgia looks like a top 10 to 15 team in the country. Things change as the season goes, right? But they have that now, and they are in first place in the SEC. And also importantly, they stopped a slide. Like, they had won, or they had lost back-to-back series after starting 15-1 in SEC play. And so for them to arrest that, get some momentum back, and do it against one of the best teams in the country, I think it was super significant for them, you know, just in terms of building confidence, because the rest of the schedule isn't easy either. It's not as difficult as Tennessee and South Carolina and Arkansas, maybe, but, you know, they're at Florida this weekend, and then they come home and play Vanderbilt, and, you know, those are not easy series to have on your slate, especially if you're, you know, going through it, which they would have been if they had lost three straight series. So I think all of that was pretty significant. The reward is that, you know, they remain in first place in the SEC. I still kind of like Tennessee to go catch them. They're just a game back. They hold the tiebreaker, so they don't have to win it outright to be the number one seed in Hoover. But Tennessee probably has a little bit harder of a final 2 weeks. And, you know, Kentucky has now shown they're not going to roll over.
There are the window washers.
So if you're looking at Kentucky coming out of this weekend, I mean, I think you have to feel really good. But like you said, Peter, I think it's more about what they did this weekend as opposed to what Arkansas didn't do or anything like that. You can have some, you noted some important things with Arkansas. I mean, I do think at this point the lineup is the lineup, and anybody waiting for them to come back and show more offense, it's just not really going to happen for them. they are going to have to figure out how to win low scoring games in the postseason. Hagan Smith was really good on Friday night. Again, Arkansas remains undefeated when he takes the ball. Brady Tiger wasn't as good as he can be on Saturday. That's not an anomaly. He's a bit up and down. Like, he suffers more control problems than Smith and Molina, I think. So, like, if he has it, he's really good. And if he doesn't, what happened on Saturday can happen to him. Mason Molina missed his start last week with a, I guess it was a like sprained ankle, twisted ankle. I don't know exactly what they termed it, but it was some sort of like leg injury. And so he had was coming off of that. He didn't go that deep into the game. I'm willing to just give him a pass based on the fact that he was coming off of that injury. Maybe that's fair. Maybe that's not fair. I don't know, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt in that circumstance. And like, that's tough for Arkansas that like they had to go through that. But you know, those are the ups and downs of the season. The Will McIntyre thing is probably more concerning to me than anything that's happened with the rotation, because part of the reason why Arkansas was so good early on is Will McIntyre was doing his best Kevin Copps impression. And he wasn't Copps, like, never was anybody that was like thinking that way, or, you know, it that just was never going to be what he was. But since the middle of April, things have not been as good for him. And, you know, that is a little bit of a concern. And I thought, you know, he was really good on Friday night. And I thought, well, maybe it's because like they brought him back. Like, how much has he been pitching twice in a weekend? That's not really it. He's pitched twice in a weekend quite often this season, and usually it's been pretty good. Kentucky just has a good offense, though. And that is one thing that we just kind of have to acknowledge, that they have an offense that is relentless. And, you know, they do a really good job in terms of making pitchers work and putting the bat on the ball and making innings roll. You know, they're not an all or nothing offense. They can drive the ball, but they're not just out there looking for homers, and it's not a three true outcomes kind of thing. So they can make life difficult on opposing pitchers. And on Saturday and Sunday, they did that to Arkansas. They did that to the best pitching staff in the country. And they should be commended for that more than I feel like Arkansas needs to sit around and worry about what went wrong in Lexington.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. And with Arkansas, the offense is the offense, like you said, at this point, and its pitching is good enough and has shown it's good enough to carry them all the way to Omaha, perhaps even further than that. And I think obviously the key for them and a lot of these other teams is the fact that regardless of what happens with the SEC regular season title and what happens in Hoover, they're probably going to be a top eight national seed, which is huge for the Razorbacks. They're 31-2 at home. And a lot of these teams in the Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas A&M tier are exceptionally better at home than they are on the road. But Arkansas, 31-2 at home, 6-6 in true road games. I think regardless of the concerns that I have around the offense, and maybe a little bit more so in the pitching staff, just at least lately, that will all be quelled with them having a top eight national seed. I would be hard pressed to see a scenario in which they lose twice in Baumwalker, let alone in a regional, or let alone a super regional, but especially in a regional. Like, I think that is going to serve them really well. So very much more excited now about Kentucky than I was this time last week. So I'm excited to see how they close out the season, because like you said, there's depth on both sides of the baseball. They do a lot of things really, really well. They don't give teams free bases. Like, you have to beat Kentucky to beat Kentucky. Like, that probably came out really weird, but like, they're not going to hand teams games. So another couple of tough series for the Wildcats down the stretch. I'm particularly intrigued by this weekend at Florida. I think that one is a lot tougher than people are probably giving Florida credit for or slash realizing. Like, I think that is more of a danger zone for the Wildcats than home against Vanderbilt. And then you also throw in a couple of you throw in a somewhat tricky midweek game against Wright State that'll probably be like 21-10. But no, excited to see how they close the season out and roll into Hoover.
There's a non-zero chance that they are facing Florida and Vanderbilt, both in, like, with their opponents facing must-win situations. And, you know, this weekend, you know, Florida is coming off of a really tough series loss at home against Tennessee. They split a doubleheader on Friday. And I was really excited for Florida after they won that game on Friday evening. They beat Drew Beam. Florida has not had, they just haven't had a chance to go out and win a series in quite some time. I think it was like literally a month since they'd been in this situation. And they really haven't lost with Jack on the mound. I think they've lost just once prior to going into last weekend. They lost just once in a game Jack started on the mound. So I was like, well, maybe Florida's about to steal something on Tennessee. And how significant would that be for their tournament hopes and, you know, just starting to feel good as we get down the stretch. And then it started well for Florida. And then Tennessee just annihilated them. They knocked Jack out a little bit early. And by the end of the weekend, Florida's bullpen is not that great necessarily. Certainly not after playing a doubleheader the day before. It was not in this case. And Tennessee was ready to go. And they rolled to a run rule win. You know, the upshot of that on the Tennessee side is that they're now the number one team in the country. On the Florida side, the Gators now are sitting there needing three SEC wins. Their entire season basically is, can they go 3-3 over the next six games as they host Kentucky and then go to Georgia? So this is their last home weekend as they welcome Kentucky in. They know that they need these three wins. If they get these three wins, they're almost certainly in the tournament. Their RPI is in the top 25. They have an elite strength of schedule. Everything is there for them. But they have to win three SEC games. In the last 10 to 15 years, I think this goes back longer, but certainly in the last 10 to 15 years, there's only been one SEC team that has gone to the NCAA tournament with just 12 conference wins in the regular season. That was Alabama in 2021. Notably, they only played 29 games. They were 12-17. There's never been a 12-18 team. And also 2021, you might remember, was a little bit goofy in a number of ways. And so that being the anomaly is not what you want. Like, you have to get to 13 wins to really give yourself a chance. And if they get to those wins, like, their RPI says that that will be good enough. But they really have to do it. And they also have to they have to win these three games because they're also up against it. It's a requirement to be an at-large team that you have a winning record. And Florida right now is one game over 500 or two games over 500, whatever it is. If they go to Hoover at 2-4, like having just gone, you know, 2-4 in their last six, they have to reach the semifinals to leave Hoover with a winning record. And if they reach the semifinals, having just gone 2-4, they'll go to the tournament too, probably. That'll help everything immensely. But I just have very little trust in this Florida team to be able to put together that kind of week at the SEC tournament. To me, the path is truly go 3-3 in their final six SEC games. And so that puts a lot of pressure on them this weekend because you don't want to go to Athens needing to win a series. You really want to get something done this weekend. And you know, so I started all of this with, well, like, Kentucky is going to be facing two very hungry teams over the next 2 weeks, potentially. We'll see what happens to Vanderbilt this weekend against Tennessee. But if they don't get the wins they need, then they're going to go to Lexington knowing that they have to win one or two games to help their own tournament chances. So I, like, everything gets a little weird at the end of the season, right? That, like, these teams that you feel like, oh, well, like, it's not that big of a deal if you'd played them a month ago. Well, now it's an entirely different situation because those teams, like, they can see exactly what they have to do and they're playing for their postseason lives. And that's not to say Kentucky isn't going to play with a lot of energy and urgency over the next 2 weeks, but it's different for them. It just is. Like, they're going to play for an SEC title. That's what they're out there playing for. And, like, that's important. Everyone's really interested in that. But if you're playing to just get to extend your season, I do feel like that's a little bit different.
Yeah. And it's not a knock on Kentucky or any of these teams at all with less at stake, but it's just inherently different when your season is on the line. And for Florida, the point you brought up that I think is the most important is it really feels like they need to win this weekend series against Kentucky, because I think that, one, the sledding is tough enough where you have Kentucky and Georgia to close out the season, but two, if we're sitting here in 5 days saying, you know, Florida has to win a series at Georgia to feel like okay slash decent about its at-large hopes, I think that is that's a very suboptimal spot to be in. And for them to pull it off, like it has been all year, is they need some consistency at least out of its pitching staff. And they moved Brandon Neely back to a bullpen role, which I think that sets up well, just in the short term, at least, for what they need to accomplish in the next 2 weeks. And then, you know, we can revisit it all if necessary. But I think, one, you need length out of the starting pitching. Liam Peterson was really, really good in game one last Saturday. I think he went 4 shutout with 7 Ks. They need another solid start. We're asking for a lot here, but like they have the personnel where if it's all clicking for a weekend or longer where they can pull this thing off, like the lineup is still pretty formidable. A couple of guys, namely Brody Dinay, Cade Kierland has swung it better lately. And then you obviously have the star power with Jack in the middle there. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. I think that if they don't win the series this weekend and it's still like mathematically possible where they can do it, I probably will not feel great about them going to Athens. But if they can win, if they can pull off a couple of wins this weekend, that would be so huge, because that gives them a ton of momentum. It gives them confidence. All they got to do is probably win one at Georgia. And I think that the last thing that really anyone in the field of 64 wants is to see a Florida or an LSU in its regional as a 2 or a 3 seed, because, you know, like no one is going to be sitting there on Selection Monday being like, oh, thank God, you know, Florida's our 3 or LSU's our 3. So giving this team hope is a very dangerous thing.
Well, you mentioned LSU, and they are also a team that is playing for their postseason lives right now. And I don't know if that's why they were able to take down A&M last weekend, but I'm sure it didn't hurt. And so they go out in the box. They win the first 2 games. Gage Jump was really good on Friday night. On Saturday, Luke Coleman was pretty good, but Christian Little was like definitely the story of the pitching staff on Saturday. Griffin Herron did incredibly well on Friday night as well. And LSU wins those first 2 games. They were up early on Sunday. Then they ran out of pitching and A&M kind of cruised to a win on Sunday. LSU missing what would have been a massive, massive sweep if it actually happened. But they the pitching staff was just too taxed by Sunday, and A&M is too good to for that to have happened for the Tigers. But they still get a huge series win. They're in a position now. They have 9 SEC wins. They need 4 more. Their RPI is in a similar spot as Florida. It's not quite as, the metrics aren't quite as good as Florida's, but they're good enough that we're talking about needing 13 SEC wins and then hoping, because 13 is not a guarantee. 14 is a guarantee. 13 is not. But they have to get to 13 before we can worry about any of that. And they face a trip to Alabama this weekend, and then they host Ole Miss. They're playing a lot better. They're playing a lot closer to the team we thought they were going to be. Gage Jump took a little while to get things fully going. Like he hadn't pitched much, you know, coming off of the injury and then, you know, getting his feet wet in the SEC, but he's been really good. Tommy White is hitting, Jared Jones is hitting. Like LSU, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say like they look like the team that we had ranked number 2 on opening day, but they certainly look like a much closer version of that than what they did, you know, 6 weeks ago.
100%. And starting with A&M, super, super quick. Similar to Arkansas, and probably even to more of an extent, obviously a suboptimal series loss, but I am the furthest thing from concerned about A&M, and nobody really should be. It was like weirdly bad defense, kind of some uncompetitive at bats. It just didn't feel like they they got off the bus until, I don't know, whatever it was, the fifth inning on Sunday where they exploded for 9 runs and they kind of coast to that run rule win. So A&M's fine. They're still one of the most, if not the most complete teams in college baseball. But with LSU,
before
obviously,
we get to LSU, A&M, does it weird you out? Or is it anything more than just strange that their two series losses are to Florida and LSU?
Oh, that I think it's just a strange coincidence. It is like,
I've been trying to figure out if there's a through line there and I can't find one. It's just like the weirdest thing that like these two teams that, you know, are tied together because they played for the national title last year and this year they're struggling to get into the tournament. Like those are the two teams that A&M beat. Notably, both were road series. And that would be interesting, except that A&M's going to play at home in June, so it doesn't matter. But it feels like a weird one, and just a weird one. But like, it's interesting that those are the two series losses.
Yeah, a very funny coincidence. And then also, like with A&M and Arkansas, A&M's home record is 30-2, and on the road they're 8-6. So similarities in the home road splits, but just an off weekend for the Aggies. Everyone's kind of had one this year, so. That was theirs, I guess. But back to LSU, they obviously needed that, to say the least. And with they need four across these last six games. They need more than Florida, but the schedule, I'd say, is more forgiving. Like, this weekend at Alabama is obviously huge. I think, again, you really, really want a series win. A sweep would be ideal. Alabama might be now feeling itself a little bit more after a huge win on Tuesday night over now 21 Troy, 7-6. That was huge for the Tide. But with LSU, like similar to Florida, they have the personnel. That rotation of Holman and Jump, especially that 1-2 punch, is really, really solid. And then in the lineup, like Tommy White is been hitting for his entire life. Jared Jones has swung the bat really well. And these Ashton Larson has emerged as a key piece. And I think the key for LSU when all is said and done, and you hit the nail on the head when talking about what happened on Sunday, is it just ran out of pitching. And like, that's what it's going to come down to. And I think that when you look at the bullpen, those 3 2/3 innings from Christian Little on Saturday on Saturday were borderline like season salvaging at least. And if he can look like what he did on Saturday, or even somewhat like he did on Saturday, that is going to be huge, because like it wasn't a fluky box score line. Like, he was up to 97, the cutter was really good, he was attacking the zone. It was a glimpse of like 2022, 2021 Christian Little, and it was really cool and kind of made me happy to see. But they need Justin Lohr needs to be better. Thatcher Hurd, it's been a really up and down, almost just kind of really just a down year for him. And if he can get something to click at all over the next two weekends, it'd be huge. But I think that, again, the lineup lacks the depth, obviously, that it had last year. The pitching staff is still a huge question mark. You can't really stamp any series going forward. Granted, there are only two left as a series win for LSU. So I think four is a little bit of an uphill battle, but we'll see how it rides the momentum that it built last weekend, because I think that there is a lot to be said for that. And if they can heat up at the right time, again, like I said about Florida, no one's going to be sitting there happy that they have a LSU team that is feeling itself in its regional. So if they can go out and win these four games, they're going to be flying really, really high into Hoover and then also beyond that. And all I'll say is, thank goodness they didn't lose on Tuesday against Northwestern State, because that would have undone it would have undone some of what it did over the weekend against A&M.
Yeah, that's not the confidence, whatever the opposite of a boost is, like punch that you want. I like LSU at home against Ole Miss a lot on the final weekend of the season. Ole Miss this weekend, they're in the exact same spot as LSU. They're 9-15. They host A&M. So unless the same thing happens to A&M this weekend that did last weekend, in which case we're having a much different conversation about the Aggies this time next week. Ole Miss may have already, the postseason ship may have sailed by the time they get to Baton Rouge. Like, that's entirely possible, in which case, like, how hard are they going to fight, knowing what, like, basically what is at stake for them is just getting into the SEC tournament and going on a crazy run there. So, like, I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting to see. LSU has to find a way to win a game this weekend at Alabama. If they do that, they keep all their hope alive. Two wins would be great for them, because sweeping a series is something LSU hasn't done in SEC play, and they've had some opportunities and just come up short. So I would not want, if I was LSU, I wouldn't want to put myself in that situation where you need a sweep at the end. But that's a big series to watch this weekend. The biggest series to watch this weekend, I would say, in the SEC, well, maybe not the biggest, one that I'm most interested in, how about we say that, is Vanderbilt hosts Tennessee, because this is really interesting to me from the rivalry standpoint, and also because Vanderbilt is coming off of getting swept at Georgia, and they looked terrible doing it. So Vanderbilt has now lost consecutive series. They had that really tough series loss at home to Mississippi State, getting they were one out away from winning the rubber game on Sunday. They lose it. Then they go down to Georgia and they just got hammered for three games, basically. So what they come home, they win on Tuesday night, they beat Louisville in another rivalry spot, but this one's a bigger one. Tennessee has won seven straight against Vanderbilt games, not series. And, you know, they're coming in as the number one team in the country. I mean, there's just an awful lot of side stuff with this series. And then you have the on-field, like, how is Vanderbilt going to respond? Can Vanderbilt slow down this very powerful Tennessee offense? Like, Vanderbilt plays better at home. Like, is the home field advantage enough to sway this? There's a lot going on this weekend in Nashville, and I'm quite interested in that series.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's in they've let it snowball at him a little bit. It felt like that Hunter Hines two-run home run with two outs in the ninth inning on that rubber game. That was a huge, huge gut punch, and it clearly rolled into this weekend at Georgia. And granted, Georgia's a really, really good team, and they're playing exceptionally well. But the Commodores kind of no-showed down there in Athens on both sides of the baseball. Like, Bryce Cunningham and Carter Holden, they didn't have their best stuff. They got no length out of them. And then the lineup, I think, is a bit more concerning, because we had talked about, at least for the first part of the year, and even a little bit deeper, how pleasantly surprised we were with the so-called firepower that it had and kind of depth. And it has come, I guess, for lack of better phrasing, it has kind of just crashed back down to earth in the last couple of weeks. I'm a lot less, I think, confident in a lot of the pieces that the Commodores have. And granted, injuries have played a role. Like, they've been dealt a pretty brutal hand when it comes to injuries. So, like, that certainly factors in both on the mound and also offensively. But it's tough because they desperately need to get back on track before the postseason starts. And when you have, like, it could get really tough on them and really weird quick, because their last two series, it's home against Tennessee, as you said, the number one team in the country. We've talked at length about Tennessee. When you talk about complete teams in college baseball, for me, it's them and A&M. So that's obviously a huge series. And then at Kentucky is at Kentucky. So, like,
Vanderbilt still needs two wins to get, they have 11 SEC wins right now.
And that was my next point. Like, there is still, like, work to be done for Vanderbilt to feel really good about a bid to the NCAA tournament. And two wins these next two weekends are going to be really hard to come by. Like, I think they do it, but I am not confident at all that they can win either of these series. So they're going to be limping into Hoover and perhaps limping into a regional, but they need to find some fixes really quick. And I'm just not sure where you can, like, I'm not sure where they're going to come from, because the rotation is the rotation at this point, and the personnel in the lineup, like, that's who you're going to be rolling with. So they're in a really tricky spot.
They did get some good news, as Ethan McIlvain seems to be back. Like, that's a significant boost to the pitching staff, and Devin Fittrell has returned as well. But they need a lot to go to. They don't need a lot to go right for them. They just need to avoid getting swept twice. But it's, things have gotten hairier than I would have anticipated. And part of that, like, let's give credit to Georgia here. Georgia went out and played really well. I feel like a lot of times I've just kind of brushed off Georgia as like, oh, well, they play really well at home. And like, oh, it's built for the ballpark. And of course they mash. They're in Athens, you know, whatever. But like this weekend, they pitched quite well. Yes, Charlie Condon is on an absolute heater. He's homered in 7 straight games. He now has 33 home runs this season already, and is on pace to hit 40, which is truly absurd. That's only happened 4 times in the history of Division I college baseball. Don't get too wrapped up in like that with Georgia, because like that's really loud and it's a really important part of who they are. But like also this weekend, they shut out Vanderbilt on Friday. They gave up only 4 runs on Saturday. And yeah, they give up 7 on Sunday, but you know, stuff happens on Sunday. But like for them to pitch that way, for Lane Finley to come out and pitch that way, especially at the front of the rotation, I felt like all of that was very significant for the Bulldogs, who, by the way, are now up to 5 in RPI. They're 13-11 in SEC play. With that kind of RPI, they need to get to 16 wins, and then they will host. They're at South Carolina this weekend. Those two teams are like going at it for pecking order in the host race, the seed line race. Very interesting series. Maybe not the most impactful, because both of them are very much tracking towards hosting, and you know, they're probably not going to be top 8 seeds. But like, if you like two power hitting offenses, Charlie Condon making a run at the 21st century home run record, probably as early as the series opener, you know, it's quite an intriguing series in Columbia.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're giving Georgia its flowers a little bit, maybe a slightly overdue, but Charlie Condon is in the midst of this historic season, and it's been incredible to watch. I'm not sure when we'll see a season like this maybe ever again. But it's also like Corey Collins has bounced back in a huge way, which has been nice to see. He had gone through it the last couple of years after a solid freshman year. He is now having a career year, hitting over 350. And then you have a few really nice supplemental pieces in Paul Tutz and Dylan Goldstein, Slade Alford, veteran Fernando Gonzalez is swinging it well. And then on the mound, like Leighton Finley was outstanding last week, and I think it was 6 shutout, gave up just 3 hits, 11 Ks. The pitching staff is what, like, that's going to be the key for this team. And then obviously in what's the cheat code of 2024, playing at home where it's 28-3, if they can host, it's going to be hard to not feel good about them in advancing from its regional. Just the offense, like you said, is built for that ballpark. They swing the bats exceptionally well there. Pitching staff is better there. I think that it's going to come down to, like it is for so many of these teams, like depth in the bullpen and consistent quality appearances, because if they can string that together, they can obviously swing it with any team in the country. It's just going to be a matter of how well their pitching does. So really excited about the Bulldogs. This weekend in Columbia is going to be a really good series, I think. South Carolina, like you said, it's not going to, one way or another, it's probably not going to damage or really drastically boost anyone's resume, like one way or another. It'd obviously be a quality series win for whoever comes out on top, but we're not going to be sitting here on Monday dinging whoever lost the series in all likelihood, unless it's in some like crazy fashion. So Petrie versus Condon is going to be really fun to watch. And then in general, it's just two really good teams. So that'll be very exciting.
I will say the pressure is much more on South Carolina, because they are at Tennessee to close out the season. They like Georgia, need 3 wins to feel good about hosting over these next 6 games. I would not want to go to Tennessee needing to win a series, so I would advise South Carolina to win this weekend if they want to ensure that they host a regional. All right, that was a lot about the SEC. It was a very SEC weekend, pretty electric slate for the SEC this week ahead as well, but let's get a break in here, and we'll talk about some of the other action around the country here in a second. But first, check this out.
If you've heard us talk about HelloFresh before, I wouldn't be surprised if you wonder, okay, is this really as good as they make it sound? And I tell you, listener, it is. And I say that because I am a HelloFresh success story. I say that because I'm not the chef. I'm not the cook in our house. But with HelloFresh, I've become one who can actually be part of the food prep, cooking dinner rotation. Generally, it's breakfast for dinner or something on the grill if dad's expected to cook. Because that's just not who... I don't have those skills. HelloFresh gave me those skills. Why? Because they're quick and easy meals with the instructions that both have written and pictures have allowed me to take the ingredients, do exactly what they tell me to do, and at the end of the day, produce a meal that my family said, wow, that's pretty good. And for them to say that's pretty good when I'm making dinner, that is a miracle. HelloFresh does that for you. It does it for me. And it also gives you the flexibility. You can pick out on their app what food you want to eat. It takes a couple of minutes. They'll deliver it to you. And not only that, but they'll do it in portions that also help me because I have a tendency to eat as much as on my plate. They give you just the right amount of food, whether it's for two, whether it's for four, they proportion it out for you. So if you want to check out HelloFresh like I have, go to HelloFresh.com/BaseballAmerica14. That's BaseballAmerica with the numbers 1-4. Use that code for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/BaseballAmerica14. You can get America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh.
All right, Peter, let's head to the Big 12. If you thought my take about Kentucky not being an elite SEC team from last week, if you thought that aged well, last week I said that I was basically over Oklahoma and I had no confidence that Oklahoma was going to go to Lubbock and play well because nobody goes to Lubbock and plays well. That's what I said. Well, Oklahoma went to Lubbock and they swept Texas Tech. And that creates a whole conversation about Texas Tech. But what I want to focus on here is the fact that basically Oklahoma won the Big 12 last weekend. It's not over in part because they don't hold the tiebreakers over Texas or Oklahoma State, but they are in first place pretty commandingly at this point with a three-game lead, six games to play, big time series for them, coming away with the sweep. Feel a lot better about Oklahoma today. They're in a great position to win the conference. In the last year in the conference, they haven't won the Big 12 since like 1995, I think it was, when it was the Big 8. Potentially historic championship here coming up for Oklahoma sometime. It could happen as early as this weekend. Probably not. It'll probably happen early in the final weekend, but the Sooners really got a much needed series down there in Lubbock. Just can't say enough about the way that they went about it. They didn't trail all weekend. Truly comprehensive sweep of the Red Raiders in Lubbock, which it was the first time Texas Tech had been swept at home in more than a decade. So absolute, like, hats off, Oklahoma. I was wrong.
a huge bounce back after last weekend's tough to swallow series loss against Texas in a rivalry series, and then they lose in rather uninspiring fashion at Oral Roberts, and we're kind of sitting here like, you know, I wonder how they're going to look at Texas Tech. And Texas Tech, obviously, it's ballpark, and then obviously its lineup this year, like, notorious for being a very offensive environment. And I think the biggest credit of the weekend goes to the pitching staff. Now, obviously, you have to score runs to win games, and the offense did that, but Braden Davis goes out on Friday night and sets the tone with seven shutout innings, him and Will Carson combined for the shutout. He's a guy that I think is rather underrated when it comes to the Big 12 and talking about the best arms in the conference. Like, when Oklahoma is going to be able to trot him out for game one in a regional or however they line up, it's pitching, it's probably going to be him. But I think you can feel really confident in him at least putting you in a position to win, which is so huge for like the confidence of the team. And then obviously on the staff as well, you feel very comfortable with him on the mound, and that's not going to change. And then similarly, like Kyson Witherspoon has also been a really solid arm in a starting role. And I know it's been a little bit of an up and down last few weeks for him, but he turned in a better outing this week. Only 3 earned across 6 2/3. He's got really big stuff. Just needs to command the ball a little bit better. But I really like the personnel that this Oklahoma team has, both offensively and on the mound. You have two starters that you can feel confident in, which a lot of teams can't say. They have some quality arms coming out of the bullpen. And then, man, the lineup, you talk about this Kentucky-esque offense, and Oklahoma plays a very similar brand of baseball, like a lot of pressure on the base paths. They're not afraid to play small. They're not afraid to, like, they can drive the ball. Like, they are built to kind of get into any sort of, like, they're comfortable getting into any style of game with a team. And again, that's a unique trait to this Sooners club, and you can't say that about a lot of teams around the country. In terms of like you can't say Arkansas would be comfortable getting into a slugfest. So I might be a little higher on the, like, I'm on the bullish side for the Sooners, and looking at its remaining schedule, Baylor and Cincinnati, the Big 12 is really weird where anyone can kind of beat anyone, but I think that those are two series, especially Baylor. Those are two series that you can feel reasonably confident in likely winning. Cincinnati is tricky. Just it's also on the road.
Cincinnati is incredible at home.
Yeah. I think they're 17-6 this year at home. So, something really good, like a lot of teams are, but have been maybe most impressed with the Sooners, their ability to play on the road and play well on the road. I think they're 12-4 in true road games and only 15-10 at home, which is a little odd, but like they have no problem going to hostile environments and winning games. So can't really say enough good things about the Sooners right now. And last weekend was just another feather in their cap.
The only thing that I'm like weirded out by Oklahoma about anymore is that they have this really weird thing where they either sweep a Big 12 series, they've done that 5 times, or they lose them. The other three series that they didn't sweep, they lost them all. So it's the weirdest thing. Well, except maybe Texas, but you know, like the Big 12 is very strange, and Oklahoma is cruising at this point. And I feel really good about where they're at just in terms of getting to play at home in the NCAA tournament and, you know, finishing off this Big 12 title. They've got to do it, but I feel like the way their schedule sets up, there it's pretty good likelihood that they're gonna get it. And that was made all the more likely because Texas last weekend took care of Oklahoma State. They win the series in Austin, taking the first 2 games. And so Texas has now won consecutive series against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. The Horns are in a 3-way tie for second place. The Pokes and West Virginia, 3 games off the pace. They do own the tiebreaker on Oklahoma. If Oklahoma stumbles down the stretch, both Oklahoma State and Texas are sitting there waiting to take advantage of that. But it feels, again, like Oklahoma's in a strong spot. So what Texas did, though, last weekend, regardless of the Big 12 title, winning those first 2 games, really important. Texas has mostly this season been about offense. Like, their offense has been quite impressive. They average more than 8 runs a game. But what happened this weekend was I came away more impressed by the pitching staff. That was the way they beat Oklahoma State in my eyes. Like, Max Grubbs was pretty solid on Friday night for 6 innings. And, you know, they've been looking for somebody to lead off series basically all season. They hadn't won a series opener since March before last Friday. And then on Saturday, they got a good performance from 4 different pitchers, held Oklahoma State, which has a really powerful offense, to just 5 hits on the day. And, you know, so if Texas is going to pitch like that, like, that's not the, it wasn't the greatest pitching performance of the weekend, but Texas has a strong offense. If they're also going to round into a little bit of form on the mound, they become a lot more dangerous.
They have the pieces to make a little bit of a run here. And I think after the last four weekends, especially the last two, they're pretty safely in the NCAA tournament field. At this point, they've won its last four Big 12 series. And like you said, the key, and you kind of said the quiet part out loud, is it's really going to come down to whether or not LeBaron Johnson can find it down the stretch. And if he's able to flip a switch, either in these last two weekends or in the conference tournament, or even as regionals roll around, that drastically raises the ceiling of this year's team, because I think they now have figured it out on Friday and Saturday. As you alluded to, Max Grubbs is someone that can go out and pitch his butt off and give you five, six, or maybe even seven solid innings. Ace Whitehead was again solid on Saturday. And then Gage Bohm has been really, really reliable in the back end of the bullpen. Same with Chase Lemus. So they have personnel on the mound that you can feel confident in. And then also the lineup. It is quietly, I think, maybe rather underratedly, just given the reputation of some of these other teams in the conference, especially like Oklahoma State, who they went out and took two of three from this weekend. But the top half of that Texas lineup, like, that is the best, I'd say, quartet or five, group of five guys in the conference that you can line up with Jared Thomas, Jalen Flores, Peyton Powell, Max Ballou, like, though, Kimball Schessler to an extent. Will Gasparino has had a very solid, productive year as a true freshman, and I think he's only going to get better. But like that group of four at the top is super, super formidable. And it also helps that all four are kind of swinging it really well at the exact same time, which only makes that group more dangerous. But when this team is clicking, they're really hard to beat. And I think a little bit kind of how I feel about Oklahoma going to Lubbock and winning that series largely based on its pitching, I'm even feeling more confident about Texas that they beat Oklahoma State, a team that, to its own credit, has a great offense, or at least a really solid offense. Texas was able to win that series with its pitching and hold them at bay. Like, Nolan Schubart had been unconscious, still is really swinging it really well. Zach Earhart has had a great year. Carson Benj is Carson Benj, and they quieted those guys down. So another really solid series win for the Longhorns. And in looking at its remaining schedule, a little bit tougher sledding than maybe in Oklahoma with at UCF. That feels like a weird, tricky one. And UCF also really needs that series win. And then at home against Kansas still very sneaky and quietly 13-11 in the Big 12, 27-17 overall. They play decently well on the road. Like, if that's another tough one. So, not the easiest schedule for the Longhorns down the stretch, but they're playing their best baseball at the perfect time, it feels like.
Yeah. And, you know, every year I feel like they go through a slow start and then they figure it out, and it happened again this year. And the RPI is just going to be weird this year. They have eight quad four losses. Like, it's insane. But I do think that they can't not worry about RPI. Like, they have to finish, but they really, as long as they maintain their spot here in the where they're at in the Big 12, like, their RPI is not going to hold them back, I don't think. Certainly not as long as it's around 50. They lose 10 spots in RPI somehow along the way. We can talk, but like, the only way that happens is if they start losing a bunch of Big 12 games. So they should be, yeah, I mean, they don't even have any non-conference games left. So yeah, like, they're in the clear as long as they win their games. Texas Tech, I got them out. I don't even really have them close at this point. TCU really helped itself. They swept Baylor, feeling a lot better about where the Frogs are. And then K-State won a really tight series against Kansas, the Friday night game. Like, K-State desperately tried to give that game back and very nearly did in the ninth inning, but they squeak out with a one-run game there and then win the rubber game on Sunday. That was an important one for them and a tough one for the Jayhawks. Cincinnati won a big series against West Virginia, keeping its hopes alive. A lot still to play for in the Big 12. Should be another entertaining couple weeks in this very topsy-turvy conference. Quite the weekend that was, and hopefully we get another weekend like that out of the Big 12. All right, on to the ACC, which was much quieter as a lot of teams were on some sort of finals break over the weekend. We did have NC State and Florida State play what was a pretty entertaining series, the games that they played. Saturday's game got rained out because they didn't tarp the field, apparently, very strange
that
situation
feels like
there.
An operator error where a little, little sprinkler mistiming, maybe they were left on all night, something like that. But
I feel for NC State. They win the first game Saturday, field conditioned out, and then Sunday Florida State comes back and wins. I didn't think that series meant a ton for either team, but NC State has played its way to the hosting bubble, and if they could have won another game in Tallahassee, that might make a difference at the end of the season. We'll see. We'll never probably, but that was the big thing that was the big ACC series. It was kind of weird, whatever. Louisville probably had the loudest weekend though, going up to BC and sweeping, and that on itself is not all that interesting. BC has they've been going through it for the last few weeks, I would say, but Louisville now up to 13-11 in ACC play. That was three really big ACC wins for their tournament hopes. A lot more on the line this weekend. In the ACC, we've got Clemson going to Wake Forest as the headliner. Clemson getting a series win against Georgia Tech. And now, with Wake Forest playing a lot better, that series could be pretty intriguing. They're in Winston-Salem. You also have Duke and Georgia Tech this weekend. If Georgia Tech is going to get into the tournament, they're very bubbly right now. Like, they got to get something out of this weekend against the Blue Devils.
Yeah, just whipping around the ACC really quick. Last weekend was super disappointing. One, because you had a quiet slate just due to final exams, like you said, and then the one Nerds. Series that everyone was kind of focused on, it ended up just in a split, which was very anticlimactic. I think it's hard to not come away from those two. Like, you can't really take anything away from those two games, other than I think it was big that NC State won at least just one. They're playing really well right now. Finally won a midweek game on Tuesday. Granted, it was against Norfolk State, but they snapped that weird little streak. And then with Louisville, crazy that its series at BC was the most probably notable result in the conference of the weekend, but keeps its tournament hopes alive, put them in a better spot. They're still right on that bubble line. I think in your field of 64, they were in and not even on the first four.
Yeah, I'm very confident in them all of a sudden because so they're at 13-11 now. They close at UNC, home against Notre Dame. Their RPI is a problem. It is 56 right now, but by virtue of the games that they have in front of them, I'm not that worried about it. They need to win three of those games because if they sit there at 15-15, they have a lot of things are too bubbly for them, and part of their resume is bad. Like, their non-conference strength of schedule is 240. Like, all of this feels too much like Notre Dame a year ago if they're 15-15. But I just get to 16 ACC wins and dare the committee to leave you out. Like, there's no way. I just cannot envision a scenario. And so home against Notre Dame at the final weekend, like, even if they get swept this week by UNC, home against Notre Dame, like, you're Louisville, you play really well at home, like, you know what you would have to do. Like, I would still feel pretty good about them finding a way to get those wins. But three wins in their last six, that's why I'm so confident in Louisville. I know other people have them a lot closer to the cut line. I see three wins out of these last six.
I'm with you. And I think that, again, it's a better team than people, I think, realize and give them credit for. And then this weekend at UNC, it kind of just feels like a weekend where it's like, don't get swept. And then you get put in a must sweep scenario against Notre Dame. You never really want to be in a must sweep scenario against any team, but I feel reasonably confident that the Cardinals go out into Chapel Hill and at least get one win. I don't foresee a series win. That would obviously make them a lock for the tournament, for virtually at least. But yeah, just don't get swept at UNC, and you can kind of feel really good. And then elsewhere in the conference, yeah, Clemson at Wake is obviously that's the big one of the weekend. I think at the couch, that really plays in Wake's favor. They obviously, it's no secret, they love playing there. I would expect a lot of runs to be scored. Maybe sans Friday night with Chase Burns on the mound, but like, I think that it's going to be a pretty offensive series. I really don't know what's going to happen in that one. Like, for as weird as Wake has been this year, and I still have my concerns about the Demon Deacons, just like you do, it would not totally blow me away if they were to take two from Clemson, because I also have my own reservations about the Tigers, especially on the mound, maybe outside of Aiden Nock. But
I don't really want to like get into the, do we take Clemson? Like, what is Clemson until they lose this series? Like, as long as they keep winning series, I'm just kind of willing to be like, well, I guess this is just who they are and they're good at winning these. But yeah, I've got concerns. This weekend is a tough one for them. And Wake Forest is, you know, going to be playing, you know, if the hosting is not out of the realm of possibility for Wake Forest, it is difficult because the schedule is so hard, but it's there for the taking for them. And yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised one bit if Wake won. And that's just the weirdest spot to be in with Clemson. Like, they're a team that I should be taking much more seriously as like national championship contender, strong contender. And yet I just, like, every week it feels like they're playing a rubber game. And I it's not where I would want my team to be. Like, I just want a more complete team if I'm going to sit up and say, like, yeah, I think they can go win a national title. I mean, I think Clemson can do it, but like, for me to say that like they're the favorite or anything, like, it's, and that's what they should be because they're the ACC leaders right now. Like, it's weird.
It's really just how they're doing it. Like, they're high they're oftentimes, as you said, in rubber games. They're high scoring, and then even some of these midweek, like last on Tuesday night against Charlotte, it was a really weird one. Like, Charlotte came back from a huge deficit and took a lead, and then Clemson scored 4 in the ninth off of a play that I was like almost screaming at my TV about, the right fielder for Charlotte for some reason, with a runner on the tying run on first, dove on a ball he didn't need to dive for, tying runs, whatever. But yeah, with Clemson, like, each weekend I kind of feel like I'm just kind of turning a side eye a little bit to how they're doing it, and it's like, I'm not going to have the conversation as like, what is Clemson, until it needs to be had. If they win this weekend at Wake Forest, probably aren't going to have it at any point until like we reflect on the season. But like, I just wonder a little bit about its, like, they can, I just wonder a little bit about its depth. That's all on the mound. Like, Ethan Darden has quietly emerged as a solid starter. Aiden Nock is like very sneaky, one of the better pitchers in the entire conference. And he's going to be a major problem going forward. Like, he looks like a potential first round pick in 2026, but man, the bullpen has just been very, very shaky. And it has been for a while now. So
here's a question I got for you.
Oh, let's hear it.
Which ACC team do you think will go the furthest in the NCAA tournament?
Oh man.
Like, I understand that this stuff isn't in a vacuum, that the draw will matter and whatever. And like, which team do you trust to go the furthest?
Oh man, that's a really tough question, because I'm down to two teams in my mind, and you probably have a feel for who they are, at least one. Assuming health and assuming that these pitchers, you know where I'm probably going already.
Yes.
With answer number one. Assuming that they can get back to full strength on the mound, Florida State, I feel really confident in. I think they have a really deep run in them. And then North Carolina, I also really like. A little chalky, but again, if the Heels are somehow able to play its way and hold on to this top eight national seed that you have them projected at, one, I like the team in general a whole lot. They've been playing really, really well. They're also 29-2 at home and play exceptionally well there. Like, a lot of teams have the pieces to make a deep run. Wake Forest certainly does. Clemson, we've mentioned, certainly does. Virginia might as well just swing its way to Omaha. Who knows? Duke obviously has looked really good. A lot of these teams have College World Series, potentially even national championship type upside. when they're all clicking. But when you narrow it down, I know you said one, but to the two teams I feel most confident in, when you look at the completeness and just the entirety of the personnel that they have, it's probably those two that I would feel most confident in making a deep run. What about you?
So I've been wrestling with this for a few days. Like, I've had this in my mind. I also just tweeted a poll, if you're listening to this, care to go find it, at Ted Cahill. Because it's Twitter, I only have three options, because I gave a other as the fourth. Give us more. Like, look, I can't hide it anymore. Like, I pay for Twitter. They took my
ability to hide. I know, I used to hide my check, but yeah, I can't hide it anymore.
We both pay for Twitter, Elon. Can we get some more poll like choices? Why are we limited to four? Anyway, so you can only on the Twitter poll choose Clemson, Florida State, or UNC, because those are the top three teams in our rankings. Connor Whitaker is going to be available out of the bullpen this weekend for Florida State. No word on Leiter. So, like, that's encouraging that he's back. Not encouraging that there's nothing on Leiter. At this point, I say Clemson because I trust Eric Bakich, the tournament coach. If you take that advantage away from them, though, and, like, just force me to look at rosters, like, I wouldn't say Clemson. Again, they just play so many close games. And, like, I do think there's probably something to Bakich having the players believe in themselves and, like, where they're at with all of that. I, like, part of me is like, is Wake Forest back? You know, because, like, if you put Burns up there, if they can make it through a regional, and there are a number of ways they could do it, you put Burns up there in a super, like, you're going to feel really good about being 1-0, and then you just have to find a way to win another game. You know, but, like, UNC plays so well at home, and, like, we haven't spent as much time on UNC as we probably should have. Like, I do think they're quietly, like, really, really good, and they've found some depth on the mound that I did not realize was going to be there. So, yeah, I would say Clemson, and I would say UNC number two, and that is super chalky. Those are the two division leaders. They're 17-7. But I do feel like UNC is being slept on. Maybe not nationally. Maybe that's just an us thing. But, like, we have not, at least I have not, given the Heels probably as much credit as they deserve.
Yeah, like, and they've weathered, and you talk about injuries, like, they've weathered a pretty, like, a huge blow to its pitching staff before the season was Jake Knapp going down for the year and blowing out. And we were sitting here, I know, and it was like, whoa, like, that's a huge, huge change into how we felt, at least initially, about UNC. Maybe its ceiling, like, how was Jason DeCaro going to slot into the rotation at just 17? And he's handled himself remarkably well, and then some. Like, he's exceeded my expectations, and honestly, probably UNC's expectations as a staff. Like, what he's doing is pretty unbelievable for a true freshman of his age. And then, man, the lineup is, it's just super, super deep everywhere you look. Like, Honeycutt is obviously the star there, but Parks Harbor is a nice piece. Anthony D'Onofrio is an older, experienced guy who swung it really well, a dynamic defender, easily a plus runner. Like, you can kind of go on and on about UNC, and they also have in the bullpen, like, Matthew Mathias, at one point was leading the country in wins. He still probably might. I think he has 11 or 12, but everywhere you look, they just have a handful of guys that just go out and get it done game in and game out. And the cherry on top, like you said, is playing so well at home. And I know that's kind of been the theme of this week's podcast, but it is important to note, like, how much being at home is just going to serve these already really good teams. Like, it's going to give them much more of a boost even in the postseason. So, like, with the Tar Heels, we'll probably start talking about them a lot more here in the coming weeks, but they are, like, they have national championship type, like, they have that type of personnel on its team. And I don't think, and I'm with you that they aren't talked about enough in that grouping of teams that can win a national championship. But one more point, like, Wake, it feels like this weekend, And our tune on Wake and Clemson will probably change no matter if Clemson wins the series, not really. But if Wake wins the series this weekend, I think our we'll have a pretty interesting conversation about Clemson next week. And then also about Wake Forest, I think we'd feel a lot better because That would put the Deeks right on the hosting line, probably in a better position than not to host. And I think that would be just massive for them if they are able to come away with a hosting spot. And you talk about Chase Burns, and he's been outstanding all year. He'll set the program record for strikeouts probably this weekend. And Josh Hartle, very quietly, last three of four starts have been a lot better than what he looked like in March. Now, 2023 Josh Hartle is still eluding everyone, but like three of his last four starts have been quality starts. He'll have his hands full with a really high-powered Clemson offense this weekend, and then also at NC State next weekend. It's not going to be easy, but he's starting to round into form a little bit. But my main concern with the Deke still remains just its overall depth on the mound, both after Burns and Hartle in the rotation and then in the bullpen. Like we've said all year, like, who can you feel really confident in saying, okay, you got to go get us three outs, you got to go get us six outs, you got to get, you know, you have to go a little bit longer than that. And I'm just not sure how many guys they have that invoke that kind of confidence in me. So just a really interesting series with a lot of layers to peel back, and it'll be very, very interesting if Wake's able to come out on top.
I think this is a really good litmus test for Hartle, to your point, that he has been pitching better, but Clemson is a mature offense with that generally has a really good approach at the plate. And those were the offenses that was really giving him trouble early on. And like, look, one of those was Virginia, and that's just the best lineup in the country, and they'll give a lot of people trouble. But the mature approach, the discipline to stay with what you need to do to beat Hartle, like, that was what was giving him trouble early on. And I believe Clemson has that in their lineup. And so if he can handle Clemson, I'll feel a lot better about him, like, completely moving forward. There aren't that many lineups like that out there. So, like, I don't even know, like, in the tournament, like, would he necessarily run into one of them? Maybe not. But, like, you do have to, at least the book early on was like, you have to, like, stay with the game plan. And if you can get the hitters to stay with the game plan, like, you can beat Hartle. If he has found a way to combat that, I think, like, this would be, this is the weekend that I'm going to, like, be like, okay, he solved that. Like, we're on to the next thing now. But we'll see what Clemson can do against him. All right, let's get another break in here, and then we'll head out west to talk some Pac-12 baseball.
So, Carlos, how much would you guess on average how many days it takes in the U.S. to wait to see a doctor?
I'm terrible for this question. I mean, my girlfriend's in med school, and she makes me go to the doctor because she knows the importance of it, but I hate it. Partially, I just hate going to the doctor, but I know it takes forever. You sit in the waiting room for hours. So, I don't know, 3 weeks? I have no clue. Two weeks. Longer than that.
Americans have to wait on average 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. And I think we would qualify. RTP qualifies as a major U.S.
city. No doubt.
If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Roman's Pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or you want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to GetRoman.com/BA. That's GetRoman.com/BA, like Baseball America, for a free online visit. And visit. And when you do that, you will get free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/BA for a free online visit and free two-day shipping.
Round out this, maybe we'll get some Big Ten talk in here as well. But let's go out west. Oregon was the big mover of last week. They beat Oregon State on Tuesday. We talked about that on last week's podcast. And then they follow that up with a series win against Utah. Very important for Oregon. Also very important for Utah because they came into the weekend tied for first place. They are now two games off Arizona's pace. Arizona got a sweep of Stanford. The Cats are hot. Anybody that gets them in their regional is going to be very disappointed because Arizona, their RPI, just like they're not going to be able to host. What they did in the first half of the season has rendered that out, like it's out the window now. But now they're streaking towards the Pac-12 title, it looks like. Oregon, again, really improved themselves last week. And I feel bad for the Utes. That was a really tough weekend for them. But they did get the third game there. They're in second place in the Pac-12. On Tuesday, though, they lost to Utah Tech. And that was a brutal one. That really killed their RPI. And I hope that doesn't kill their tournament chances. But I already wasn't feeling great about their tournament chances. That one really hurt. This weekend against Arizona, critical for the Utes in a battle of first and second. So interesting week in the Pac-12. A lot of different moving parts there, but it remains Arizona in first place.
Quietly, one of the tougher conferences to figure out, I guess, at least it's a little Big 12-ish. Arizona is, I know Oregon State got a lot of love, gets a lot of love, and rightfully so. Like, they're a outstanding team. Arizona, I think, like, they could have a really, really deep run in them, I think, come June. And for me, it comes down to how well they pitch the ball. And Coach Vance and Coach DeRoyne, who are two new hires for the Wildcats, they have been, like, I would give right now, retrospectively, that's an A. I was excited about it in the moment, but it has been an A plus 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 plus, how many pluses you want, higher. Like, the three Pac-12 leaders for starting pitching in terms of ERA are Cameron Walty, Jackson Kent, and Clark Candiotti. What is common about all three of those guys is it is Arizona's weekend rotation.
And which is crazy because, like, there are so many better pitching parks in the Pac-12. Like, Arizona, it's hard to hit home runs, but, like, because of how big it is, the gaps are so big. Like, Jay Johnson made that place crazy good to hit in, or, like, really took advantage of that when he was there, you know, for their offenses. And, like, you know, like, it's not like it's a bad pitcher's park, but, like, you know, Stanford, Cal have huge ballparks. Goss is pretty big. PK is pretty big. Like, it's not supposed to be Arizona leading the conference in pitching.
Right. That's the thing, is like, it is on the hitter and pitcher friendly spectrum. Like, it's hitter friendly. And like how well they've been pitching, it doesn't stop in the rotation either. Like, they're able to trot out a handful of bullpen arms too, who have thrown really well. And I think that the one guy who might get overlooked on that staff is Anthony Susak, who you look at the back of the baseball card and it's nothing crazy, but since they took him out of the rotation, he has flourished in the bullpen and has become a reliable late inning guy. So I could not be higher on the Wildcats right now. I know today, and I think you had them as a host today in your most recent Field of 64, or no, they were a two seed, but in that regional, if it plays out where they have to go to Santa Barbara, really, if they go, unless they get a really crummy draw, like, man, with how I feel about Arizona, especially with how well that they've thrown the ball and consistently too, it's going to be hard to pick against them in a regional setting. I don't know about how you feel, but I'm really, really high on the Wildcats right now. And then you also throw in the fact that they have some firepower in the lineup as well, with guys like Mason White and Brandon Summerhill. They don't necessarily drive the ball to the yard a whole lot, but they can swing it a little bit. So I like them a lot. Oregon State is still Oregon State. I wonder just a little bit about the longevity, like how far can they go in the tournament? I just how that pitching staff, like, Aiden May has looked the part of an ace, a Friday night ace in college. But I just have my reservations about the pitching staff as a whole. No concerns about the offense. Like, those, like, they mash, but just wonder a little bit about the bullpen. And then with Utah, like you said, standings wise, like, they're right there and they have a huge series this weekend against Arizona. Feels like a must win series, just given what happened on Tuesday night, the loss to Utah Tech that kind of tanked its RPI. Like, that was brutal. After a tough series loss to Oregon, and then you go out and do that, like, it couldn't have been a worse, like, 72 hours for the Utes. So that was kind of a bummer to see. Oregon, on the flip side, picked up a really good series win They're a solid team. I don't really know about its ceiling come postseason play, but like, again, like they have the necessary pieces to potentially surprise someone, and they're not a team that people are going to be happy that they draw in a regional. Cal, you're not going to learn anything from them this weekend with, you know, they got San Jose State. It's going to come down to that last week, next week, where they've got Stanford and then a series against Washington. It's like, I hate to say it, and I hate to kind of project, but it just feels like they're just going to miss out on the tournament. I don't know where you stand on the Golden Bears, but it just feels like they're just going to be right on the wrong side of the bubble when all is said and done.
I think it's really hard for them. Their series loss to Utah is a problem, because if you're comparing those two teams, it's like, well, Utah's ahead of them in the standings and they beat them. What Cal has going for it is that they have the better RPI. They play San Jose State this weekend, which is not helping them one bit. Then they play Washington the following weekend to close out the Pac-12 schedule, also not helpful. The best thing that Cal has going for it is that they play Stanford in non-conference play twice. They already have one win against the Cardinals. So you look at the Pac-12 standings, you see Cal listed at 14 and 13. If you're a committee member and you get handed your Cal information, right now you would get told Cal is 15 and 13 against Pac-12 competition. They have a chance. They have four more Pac-12 games because they have another one of these games against Stanford. They win all four of those games and have 19 Pac-12 wins. I don't know. Like, that's a lot. And the RPI is a problem. Where they are in the standings is not amazing right now. Like, there are a lot of like wonky things, but they also own a sweep against Oregon State, a sweep against UConn. You know, there are some things here to like, is I guess my overall point here. I think they're destined to just be bubbly. Utah falling off of the bubble would actually be pretty helpful to them. And I don't think they're not done by any means. I like you, feel like it's probably going to end with them being one of the first four out. But if they can win out, and these next seven games are not, like, it's not too much to ask for that, especially because six of them are at home. I do think they would have crafted a resume that would have suddenly been a little bit hard for the committee to say, just to be dismissive of. Now, they left Utah left USC totally off the bubble last year, despite the fact that USC won 17 Pac-12 games. So like, just pure Pac-12 wins is like, they don't care that much, apparently. Again, like, Oregon State sweep, UConn sweep, like there's some real things here with Cal that continue to make them intriguing to me.
Yeah, and to your point, it feels like, one, you have to obviously sweep this weekend against San Jose State, and just in general.
Yeah, that is just you have to do it. Like, we can talk about like, oh, could they lose to Washington maybe once? Like, but like, we're not talking about that with San Jose State. That is, you have to sweep this weekend.
Yeah, and I feel like they need at least six wins.
Yes.
With its one loss coming in that Monday game to Stanford, or a one off against Watt. Like, they got to go at least 6-1.
Yeah, yes, there is max one loss here. And anything less than that, and it's going to be problematic. And I would also say that even if you win out, don't go 0-2 in the Pac-12 tournament and then like think that things are going to go well for you. So like there's a lot of work still to be done for Cal, but the Pac-12, it's really tough to figure out exactly right now. So a couple of big weeks ahead in that conference. In the Big Ten, we had Indiana going on the road, winning a series at Purdue. If you want another bad take of mine from last week, on Friday after Purdue won the opener, I wrote how Purdue was like cruising right along and like one win away from what would have like a massive series win. And I don't even remember what else I wrote, but like, you can go read it at baseballamerica.com if you want to like look back and laugh, because IU came back and won the series. And that has left the Big Ten standings in quite the jumble. You've got at the top continues to be Illinois, and then one game off the pace, Nebraska, Purdue, Indiana. game and a half Iowa, two games Michigan. Like, that's the top six teams are all within two games of each other. Some of this is just because the Big Ten doesn't play that many conference games. They only play 24, but I also do think it speaks to the competitiveness of the league this year.
I think it's up as a whole for sure. And honestly, with Indiana and Purdue, one, it was a great, it's really cool seeing Purdue play this well because there have been a ton of fans out to the ballpark. The environment has been really fun in which they play. They were really just one ninth inning collapse away in Sunday's rubber game from winning that series. Like, I thought after Friday, like, they were in a great spot to win. And then that ninth inning was really tough to swallow. But the way the Big 12 is and how much of a jumble it is at the top, you have six teams right now from first to, I guess you could call it, like, sixth or a tie for fourth. You have Illinois, Purdue, Nebraska, Indiana, Iowa, and Michigan, all within two games of each other. And it's going to make for a really fun last couple of weekends. And each series is, you know, it's going to mean a lot. And you have three super, super intriguing ones this year, this weekend. You have Purdue at Michigan, Iowa at Illinois, which is, I think, going to be a dandy of a series. And then Indiana at Nebraska, which is also going to be a really good series. So plenty to watch this weekend, as always, in the Big Ten. I'm curious where you're at, like, when the dust settles, like, if it gets a little bit chalky and, like, Nebraska wins the Big Ten tournament, I wonder, like, how many bids is the Big Ten going to have when all is said and done? I think that's going to be a really interesting conundrum for the committee.
My feeling is two, and it's really tough. They have one team in the top 25. That's Nebraska. They're 24. They have another team in the top 50. That's Maryland. They're 36. The issue with Maryland is they're 10-11 in conference play right now. They only have one series left. It's against Penn State. If they don't, like, they're eighth in the Big Ten, it's going to be hard for them to move up from there. Like, max, we're talking about, like, getting to seventh, probably. It's not mathematically impossible for them to go higher than that, but, like, let's be realistic here. They're probably going to finish seventh or eighth. And are they really going to jump that many spots? Like, Maryland has, like, a weird resume. The RPI says that they should be in, but almost nothing else does. I don't feel like that's going to go well for the Terps unless they play really well in Omaha. And then everyone else is bunched up. You know, you have a couple teams, four teams outside the top 100, a few teams in the 90s, but, you know, Illinois is 57, Purdue 62, Indiana 59, Ohio State 63. Ohio State's in the Maryland spot, though. Like, they're irrelevant at this point. Like, how many of these, like, mid-50s RPI teams are you really going to shove into the tournament? The answer is it can't be more than one. I can't imagine it. And so, like, maybe one of these other teams is able to bump up their RPI. Like, mathematically, like, a couple of them can get into the 40s, and that would change things. But if it's going to look like this, where teams are somewhere between 55 and 65 that we're talking about is being near the top and maybe being in the contention, like, I don't think you can put more than one of those teams in the tournament. And frankly, they don't belong if we're like really looking at this. You know, as I was doing the field this week, I put a second Big Ten team in. I, like, flip-flop between Indiana and Illinois so many times. It is Indiana. Like, I had to check that, though, for a second, like, which I've landed on. And it's like, do you like that team over, like, some of these other teams that are on that I bubbled out? Like, I mean, really? Like, I don't know. It's hard. We're in a hard part of the calendar for this. And the Big Ten is probably better than I gave it credit for a few weeks ago when I was super down on the conference. But the RPI is the RPI. And, like, it's not just RPI. If you look at any of the metrics, they don't love Big Ten teams. And that's a problem, because if you're going to, like, it can't even be like, oh, well, if you look at KPI instead of RPI, then, like, X. well, okay, if you look at KPI, Indiana moves up like 10 spots to 51, and you can feel a lot better about Indiana, sure. But Purdue's still 62. Illinois actually falls in KPI to 70. You know, like, there's just very little hard evidence for the committee to say, like, put these Big Ten teams in the field, except that maybe we like them, like, by the eye test. And I just don't think that's going to hold up when it comes time to when the bubble starts shrinking and it really comes time to pick the final 3 to 5 teams in the field. I don't think that's going to go well for the Big Ten.
It's just hard to envision when the dust settles, like, a lot of these teams are still going to be clumped together, and it's hard to envision more than one, excuse me, getting a bid. And with Indiana this weekend, it not a must win, but man, it would go a long way towards not cementing itself, but bolstering its resume as that second Big Ten team. Like, a series win over Nebraska would be as loud as you can get, I think, in the conference this year, which very well could happen. And then on the flip side, like, a series loss would, like, be pretty detrimental. So it's a huge, huge series for Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's not a must win, but it almost is, because of the tightness of the Big Ten standings, that if you go just 3-3 down the stretch, they lose that, and then they beat Michigan at home the following week, you're probably not going to be second in the Big Ten anymore. You're probably going to have fallen a couple spots. And, you know, it's not like being in fourth or even fifth place necessarily is the same disqualifying the way I'm looking at Maryland and being like, hey, man, like, are we really doing this? It just looks a lot better if you can say, like, okay, we finished third, you know, here are the good things beyond that. They don't look at conference standings that much, but they can. And in this, like, it just would look a lot better if you were in the top four versus falling to 5 or 6.
And with both the nature of the conference and also how the schedule lines up over the next 2 weeks, teams are naturally just going to, like, kind of, like, it's going to sort itself out a little bit. Like, teams are going to kind of fall. Like, a lot of these series are must, like, Michigan has to have this series weekend. Michigan will need to win the Big Ten tournament to get in, but from a conference standing standpoint, they're still right there. But, like, on, like, Purdue cannot afford a series loss to Michigan. Illinois, a series loss to Iowa puts them now, like, somewhat in the middle of that upper echelon pack. So there's going to be a lot to unpack these last couple of weekends in the Big 12. This weekend will maybe provide a little bit of, actually probably will not provide any clarity at all to the standings. It's going to come down to a lot of series next weekend. So it's one of the more fun conference races to follow.
Yeah, this one's definitely coming down to the close. Quickly, in the Sun Belt, Troy beat Louisiana last weekend. They nearly swept the series. They won the first two games. Game three was bonkers, and Troy ended up not being able to complete the sweep. That means the Cajuns are very likely to win the Sun Belt. It was important that they won that game from an RPI standpoint and everything. Troy very much solidified its NCAA tournament status. I would say it's not done, but the way they're playing, I feel really good about the Trojans. Coastal, meanwhile, got swept at Southern Miss. Southern Miss, great for Southern Miss. Also feel great about where they are in terms of the tournament. Coastal has lost 8 games in a row now, though. And the RPI is still good enough, but they're 11-13 in Sunbelt play. Their last 6 games are very winnable, but this is a team that, again, has lost 8 straight games. They can probably not really afford to, like, 5-1, it's fine. 4-2, maybe. But, like, the last two, they just need wins at this point. And it, like, the decline over the last 2 weeks has been shocking, given what they did to the Cajuns immediately prior to this losing streak. But it's really hit them at the worst time.
They're in a little bit of a, not in a little bit, they're free falling right now. And it's been a little, like, very unforeseen. Like, obviously it was a tough stretch of schedule with the midweek series at Creighton and then Troy and at Southern Miss. Like, that is not easy at all, but to go 0-8 in those games, that's a eyebrow raiser, big time head scratcher. And like the issue with Coastal is the bats have just completely fallen silent. Like they bounced back on Tuesday night and exploded for 15 runs against UNC Greensboro in a midweek. But outside of that, like they just have really, really struggled to hit, which has been so uncharacteristic of Coastal teams, both even this year and then in years past. Like it always has been a very offensive centric team. And when you couple that with the fact that the pitching is what it is, and it's very, I'd say, inconsistent, and there isn't a ton there to necessarily hang your hat on.
They just don't have a stopper in the rotation or in the bullpen. Like they just need somebody to be that, and they don't have that.
Right. And when you combine that with the lack of offense over the last, you get what they have shown, and that's 0-8, and they're in a really like very murky spot. And I'd say thank goodness for their sake, they have I think probably the two series you want in the Sun Belt to, or at least two of the series you want in the Sun Belt to round out its schedule, with home against Georgia State and then at Marshall. And Marshall's had a tough go of it this year, but like I feel like they at least need 4-2 to feel good about the tournament. Like 3-3 would be pretty brutal, and then obviously you can't afford a series loss. So like at least 4-2 in those games feels like a must for the Shots, who are all of a sudden in a very weird spot.
Yeah, I would not want to be a 14-16 Sunbelt team. I do think though that right now, some of this will work itself out, but right now in the top 40 of RPI, there are 10 teams that are 500 or worse in conference play. They range from Wake at 12-12 to like Maryland at 10-11 and number 35 in RPI. And there's a like whole litany of different, like, how concerned are you? Like how good a shape are they? It completely runs the gamut. Unless something dramatically changes in the last 2 weeks, there are going to be a lot of those teams still around 500 or worse come Selection Monday. And I don't think the selection committee is going to say no, hard line against teams with losing conference records. Like that happened about 10 years ago, maybe it was 2015. They did that. They really haven't done it since. I don't think they're just going to give a pass and say like, conference record, who cares? Though they came close to doing that last year in certain places, see the Pac-12, where they basically just threw out the standings. That is encouraging for Coastal, because if they do just go 3-3 to get to 14-16, like in other years, I'd be like, they're dead. How can they possibly like overcome that? But this year, I think that would actually be okay for them. I wouldn't want to test it still, but I do think they could survive that. But again, just win two series, make everybody feel a whole lot better. All right. So a lot to watch around the country this weekend. A couple that we didn't get to: Louisiana Tech hosts Western Kentucky in a first place showdown in Conference USA. That one's notable. Postseason baseball actually begins this week as the Patriot League tournament gets underway. They play best of three semifinals. So Army and Navy are hosting those. A lot of fun baseball around the country. So make sure to check that all out. And while you're at it, Northeastern goes to College of Charleston in a pretty significant CAA series.
A cherry on top, deep cut. Go Fairfield 16-2 in the MAC at Niagara, who is also 16-2 in the MAC. So that's a big MAAC tilt.
That is a massive one as well. So yeah, no matter where you look, you're going to find some great baseball. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. He might have some updates for you on that Fairfield Niagara series. I can't promise I will, but Peter's your guy on that one. Everything to read over at baseballamerica.com, both in terms of college, draft, minors coverage, as always. And we'll be back here next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast feed, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us and hit that subscribe or follow button. For Peter, I'm Teddy. Enjoy the baseball. We'll talk to you next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.